Discourse on the End of the Revolution and the Beginning of Independence by Gary Hunt, Outpost of Freedom. Episode 2, Social Upheaval, from August 16th to August 25th. Berkshire County, Massachusetts, August 16th, 1774. The Inferior Court of Common Pleas for Berkshire County was scheduled to meet on August 16th in Great Barrington. Great Barrington was a three-day ride from Boston, and the suits are the first to be heard by officials appointed under the Massachusetts Government Act. In opposition to the Whigs, local Tories, including several justices of the peace and the county sheriff, had tried to prevent a meeting of the Whigs. In that meeting, the local Whigs had developed a solemn league and covenant. The covenant provided that any trader or shopkeeper in the county would have only 48 hours to sign the agreement if he wanted to avoid a boycott of his store. On July 16th, David Ingersoll, the most outspoken of the Tories and leaders of an effort to stop the solicitation of signatures for the covenant, was kidnapped, along with his servants, and taken across the Connecticut border into Canaan, Connecticut. There he was accused of crimes including his support for the Massachusetts Government Act and opposition to the Berkshire Covenant. Though he refused to sign an oath that the Whigs had prepared, he did prepare and sign a statement, in good faith. Though no bodily damage was inflicted, Ingersoll was covered with grease, for want of tar, and feathers, put down on an empty well and kept there overnight. Meanwhile, the Whigs sent a letter dated July 25th from their committee to the Boston Committee explaining that, quote, "We are persuaded that no business can be transacted at said court," meaning the August 16th opening. "We expect to get it adjourned unless we should hear from you. We thought it highly expedient to know your thoughts on so interesting an occasion." On July 31st, the Boston Committee responded, "We acknowledge ourselves deeply indebted to your wisdom. Nothing, in our opinion, could be better conceived than the measures come by your county to prevent the court sitting." On August 15th, the Berkshire Committee prepared a petition, to wit, "To the Honorable His Majesty's Justices of the Inferior Court of Common Pleas for the County of Berkshire, we view it of the greatest importance to the well-being of this province that the people of it utterly refuse the least submission to said acts and no consideration to yield obedience to them or directly or indirectly to countenance the taking place of those acts amongst us, but resist them to the last extremity. In order, in the safest manner, to avoid this threatening calamity, it is, in our opinion, highly necessary that no business be transacted in the law, but that the courts of justice immediately cease, and the people of this province fall into a state of nature until our grievances are fully redressed by a final repeal of those injurious, oppressive, and unconstitutional acts. We do therefore remonstrate against the holding of any courts in this county until those acts shall be repealed, and we hope your honors will not be of a different opinion from the good people of this county." Close quote. Early on the morning of August 16th, as the judges were powdering their wigs and preparing to open the courts, they found that 1,500 armed men had filled the courthouse and avenues to the seat of justice so full that no passage could be found for the justices to take their places. The sheriff commanded them to make way for the courts, but they gave him to understand that they knew no court on any other establishment than the ancient laws and usages of their country, and to none other would they admit or give way on any terms. The court did not open and would never open again under British rule. David Ingersoll repaired to the wilderness to spend the night. Meanwhile, his house and office were broken into, his yard fences, his garden, house papers, and etc. were badly damaged. Berkshire was the first county to close its courts. Meanwhile, on August 16th, Thomas Gage had boasted that he had gotten 24 of the 36 mandamus counselors signed on. This was, however, soon to change. Taunton, Massachusetts, August 22nd, 1774. Daniel Leonard, one of the mandamus counselors, returned to Taunton on April 20th. Upwards of 2,000 men met on the green in that town, and but for the expostulations of Leonard's father, who disapproved of his son's being a counselor and promised to use influence with them that he should resign, would have pulled the house down. In a letter to Governor Gage, Leonard explained what had occurred. Quote, "On Sunday noon I received intelligence that the people were much exasperated at me, and the town of Taunton, with the neighboring towns, were to assemble the next day to deal with me," that was the expression, "for accepting a seat on the board, that it was expected that they would begin with remonstrances and entreaty, and if that proved sufficient to obtain an engagement on my part to resign my seat, all would be well. If not, that a number of had determined to proceed to violence. Such was the intelligence I received and could depend on. Many things rendered impractical for me to make any resistance in my own house, one of which I beg leave to mention, the situation of my wife, who was pregnant. I accordingly came as far as Staunton that date, and the next to Boston, supposing that the people would disperse without giving my family any trouble when it should be known that I was absent. But I was mistaken. On the next day, which was the 22nd instant, about 500 persons assembled, many of them freeholders and some of them officers in the militia, and formed themselves into a battalion before my house. They had then no firearms, but generally had clubs. Some of the principal persons came to my house with a message that the people were much incensed at my accepting the seat on the board, and I would resign it. Upon being informed I was not at home, they returned to the main body, who dispersed before night after having been treated with ruin by their principals. My family, supposing all would remain quiet, went to bed at their usual hour at 11 o'clock in the evening. A party fired upon the house with small arms and ran off. How many they consisted of is uncertain. I suppose not many. 4 bullets and some swan shot entered the house at the windows, part in the lower room and part in the chamber above, where one Captain Job Williams lodged. Captain Williams, at whom the firing seems to have directed, was the person that furnished me with the intelligence that the people were to assemble and to pull down and tore in pieces a written notification that was fixed on the meeting house for the people to assemble. Wherefore, I conclude it probable that the attack upon my house was principally designed for him. However that may be, my family were exposed to it, and I have received repeated advice from my friends at Taunton since I arrived at Boston that my life will be in danger if I return. Leonard remained on the council, and he remained in Boston. Hardwick, Massachusetts, August 26, 1774. Timothy Ruggles, another mandamus counselor, was accepted into the court on August 16th. On his way to Boston, he had to bypass Worcester, where a number of people had collected to stop him. On August 19th, Daniel Oliver, the justice of the peace in Hardwick, wrote to Ruggles, "There are those here who I am satisfied thirst for your blood, and they have influence enough over the others to put them up to spilling it." Ruggles, instead of going directly home, went to Dartmouth. On August 25th, the Boston Evening Post published the following letter. "We hear that a Brigadier Ruggles, one of the new-made counselors, being at Colonel Toby's at Dartmouth, the people assembled there one day this week and ordered him to depart forthwith, upon which the colonel promised them he would go the next Monday by sun an hour high, but before that time the brigadier's horse had his mane and tail cut off, and his body painted all over. There were also reports from Hardwick that a crowd of 2,000 to 3,000 were expected to assemble to force the resignation of the local sheriff, and such is the spirit of this county. They seem to be quite awake and to have awoke in a passion. It is more dangerous a Tory here than in Boston, even if no troops were there. Lancaster, Massachusetts, August 25, 1774. Abijah Willard, an accepted counselor from Lancaster, instead of going home from Boston, went to Union, Connecticut. The Patriots in Union captured Willard and made him spend a night in jail, and then returned him to Brimfield, Massachusetts, where he was placed in the hands of 400 Patriots. According to accounts, the local Patriots called a council of themselves and condemned Colonel Willard to Newgate Prison in Simsbury, and a member set off and carried him 6 miles on the way thither. Colonel Willard then submitted to take the oath, on which they dismissed him. One Captain Davis of Brimfield was present, who, showing resentment and treating the people with bad language, was stripped and honored with the new fashion of dress of tar and feathers, a proof, this, that the act for tarring and feathering is not repealed. Willard's resignation was published in the Boston papers. Quote, whereas I, Abijah Willard of Lancaster, have been appointed by a mandamus, a counselor for this province, and having without due consideration taken the oath, I do now freely and solemnly declare that I am sorry that I have taken the said oath, and do hereby solemnly and in good faith promise and engage them I will not sit or act in said council, and do hereby ask forgiveness of all honest and worthy gentlemen that I have offended. This ends episode 2.